This is Michael Reinhart, welcoming you to the U.S. National Privacy and Cybersecurity Podcast. We are led by our two hosts, Jerry Buckley and Jody Westby. This podcast is sponsored by the Association for Data and Cyber Governance. The association offers a 50% discount on membership to our podcast listeners when they go to www.adcg.org and use code POD. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and please feel free to leave us a rating or comment.
This is Jody Westby, and I'm here with my co-host, Jerry Buckley. We are honored today to have Tom Kellerman, Head of Cybersecurity Strategy for VMware, with us. Tom was appointed the Wilson Center's Global Fellow for Cyber Policy, and he's also serves on the Secret Service Cyber Investigation Board. Tom is a legend in cybersecurity circles. His expert analysis of attacks has assisted numerous companies and government agencies. He also regularly appears as an expert commentator on main cable channels. So, Tom, welcome.
Thank you, Rob.
Let's start off with the current threat environment. We've had 18 months of pandemic and remote working, and cyber attacks have run rampant. I'm sure these attacks vary in approach, but please tell our listeners your view of the current environment, and if possible, compare how dangerous it is today compared with past spurts of attacks.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we've seen a 300% increase in cyber attacks against our customer base. Very sophisticated cyber attacks, leveraging modular attack code, going well beyond the Lockheed Martin kill chain in terms of level of reconnaissance that's conducted on a victim. And more importantly, there's been a shift away from burglary and straight espionage to what's called island hopping, where they commandeer the digital transformation of the victim and use the network, the website, the mobile application, and the webs and the email servers of the victim to target their constituency. So it's a burglary has essentially become a home invasion. And more importantly, I would say that geopolitical tension is now manifesting in cyberspace in such a way that we've seen 118% increase of destructive cyber attacks against organizations due to either a failure of diplomacy between two nations or the nature in which many corporations support views that are contrarian to some of the more draconian regimes.
So compared with where we were, we have a big increase in attacks, but they're more sophisticated, is what I hear you saying.
They're more sophisticated, they're becoming more destructive, and most importantly, the adversary isn't just trying to break in and steal your crown jewels and depart. They desire to colonize your environment and use it to attack your constituency.
Multi-pronged.
Mm-hmm.
Let me bring this Jerry into the conversation. Jerry?
Tom, really great to have you with us, and thanks for making the time to do this podcast recording. After listening to you, I want to ask, can you give the top three or four ways these attacks are being conducted?
Yeah, the top attack vectors of choice are no longer spear phishing. Spear phishing comes in about fourth place. The primary vector of infiltration nowadays is application-based attacks, followed by island hopping, where they're attacking some component of your information supply chain that goes beyond your technology service providers, extends to general counsels, outside marketing firms. And then that's followed up by the attacks against your cloud environments, whether you outsource those or whether those are private. Then spear phishing comes in fourth. But we're also seeing a surge of nuanced new attacks nowadays against APIs and API infrastructure, as every company in the world, even defense industrial base entities, are becoming technology companies.
Interesting.
So you've been around the block on cyber, from the World Bank to top security firms, to the venture capital world and public-private initiatives. The bad guys are winning still. What do companies have to do to change the dynamic?
Well, in essence, they need to create shared risk. They need to invert their security paradigm, have it look a lot less like a fortification that's impregnable and a lot more like a supermax prison. What I mean by that is 100% prevention is not possible. On average, entities and corporations are significantly compromised at least, roughly twice a year. So it's all about decreasing dwell time and inhibiting the capacity of that adversary to move freely within your environment and to leverage integrity attacks against you. But most importantly, the name of the game now is to prevent them from using your environment to launch attacks against your constituency. So number one, They should be elevating their chief information security officers to report directly to the CEO and give them authorities that are distinct, including veto power against the CIO for anything that would increase the attack surface, and also give them commensurate budget that should be equal to roughly 20% of the IT budget. In addition, they need to conduct threat hunting on a weekly basis and use those threat hunts in the immediacy of the moment as tactical action items to secure their environment. They should be integrating their network defenses with their endpoint protection platforms to improve telemetry. They should use micro-segmentation where they can to limit lateral movement. They need to really adopt, you know, cloud workload security because of the nature of the world we live in and how we've transformed during this pandemic. And then finally, I would highly recommend that if they don't have the capacity internally to have a true SOC or a true security team, that they outsource to a managed detection response firm who specializes in their industry.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, what about all these companies that don't have all that set up and don't even have the internal expertise to know how to do that? And I think the managed security service provider, the MSSP, is a good option. But these attacks are increasing on the vendors too. So it needs to be one that has good security in place, right?
Yes. You know, that's why the problem in cybersecurity in the industry writ large for years has been we haven't practiced what we preached. And I think that's changed. It's dramatically changed. I think SolarWinds was a tipping point on that shift. But most importantly, it's about implementation of zero trust internally and going beyond zero trust to extend the capacity to leverage what's called intrusion suppression external to your environment. So what that really means, intrusion suppression is, can you detect, deceive, divert, contain, and hunt an adversary unbeknownst to an adversary in your environment? Think about your house. Someone breaks in. You don't want your guard dog to growl or bark when they are following the intruder. You want them just to be ready to attack on your signal.
Well, I think my dogs might bark. Gary?
You know, the mention of this, of the smaller companies, the companies that can't afford all this, does leave the question of who in the company knows enough to pick the right outside provider. And there still has to be somebody like that. Jody has developed a course, the Data Privacy Protection Specialist course, sponsored by the same people who bring this podcast, ABCG. And I think that it would make sense for any company to have their person take that course. And so you at least have somebody internally who can make the recommendations of the type of professionals to hire outside. But Tom, since this podcast is about the policy and legislative issues related to privacy and cybersecurity, what do you think the government has to do? And can you mix in Congress, the White House, the government agencies, and the departments? And they answer if you would be so kind.
Happy to. So first and foremost, we need to appreciate that there's a three-legged stool that substantiates the cybercrime persona. The criminal persona of a cyber criminal is dependent upon their reputation, which is dependent upon A, one leg of the stool, which is their hacking prowess and capabilities they leverage, B, the bulletproof hosts and dark web forums that they are associated with, and C, their capacity to deliver capital for goods and services via virtual currencies. We need to put pressure on the other two legs of the stool. We can't keep fighting the arms race. So in order to do that, we need to modernize forfeiture and any money laundering laws to really go after the virtual currencies and alternative payment channels that are complicit in facilitating the transfer of wealth to these individuals, and then forfeit those assets so that they can be used to fund critical infrastructure protection, whether it's Jen Easterly at CISA who's doling out grant money to the water utility in Florida. It doesn't really matter to me, but we need to follow the money and take that money and use it to fund critical infrastructure protection. Secondarily, you know, the FTC and the FCC need to become more proactive in challenging bad actors, but more importantly, in allowing for a greater ease for virtual cease and desist to manifest in cyberspace. And I'll leave that there, Jody. I'm sure you've got a lot to say in that regard. Also, the U.S. government should offer up greater, more expansive cyber threat hunting to critical infrastructures and businesses who request it. To allow these threat hunts to examine whether or not a business has been compromised and whether or not their infrastructure is being used to attack their constituencies. And finally, look, Cyber Command has to take their gloves off. They need to proportionately take their gloves off with specific threat actors out there. Because in essence, you know, the problem, the disconnect here is law enforcement doesn't have the authority to actively disrupt dark web forums. And Cyber Command only deals with militaries and terrorist threats. So I firmly believe that we need to reclassify destructive attacks that include ransomware as acts of terror to open up the authorities and the capacity of the resources we do have to disrupt those forums and destabilize the platforms and the individuals who are launching these attacks against the U.S.
Well,
that's a big recommendation, Tom. Yeah.
I wouldn't go that far because, you know, it's the United States government that has stupidly stood around for 10 years and just talked about norms in international fora. And so our Cyber Command doesn't have the authority to attack adversaries. And right now, we don't have an international legal framework that supports that kind of activity. So I would be more in favor of the U.S. getting its leadership together on cyber frameworks at the United Nations and other international multilateral groups. And then to also look at what the public and private sector can do to work together. The government agencies can request the assistance of NSA if a company goes through a government agency. But just to call everything a terrorist attack, I mean, if other countries do that, then they could start attacking us. So I push back a little bit.
You know, I hear you. It's not everything. It's any destructive attack that purposely manipulates the integrity of data, like ransomware specifically.
Yes.
A destructive attack that renders a system useless is an attack that should be likened to sabotage and or an act of terror. And that's really what I'm stating. And it's been said before by Lisa Monaco at Justice. But really, we haven't reached that level of what are we going to do about it? And let's just be candid for the audience who haven't heard the fun fact about ransomware. 98% of ransomware will not detonate on a system that has a Russian language keyboard. And that's on purpose.
Well, of course it is. That's the game we played for too long with Russia. You know, I've worked on cybercrime issues, as you know, for more than a decade through committees I chair in the American Bar Association. And I've been frustrated through this whole period about the lack of consistent cybercrime laws globally, including procedural provisions that would enable faster tracking and tracing. Also frustrated by the lack of skilled law enforcement that we have in the U.S. to investigate these crimes, which basically FBI and Secret Service. There are very few metropolitan police departments that are adequately staffed and trained to do cyber investigations. Do you share my concerns or do you see other factors that are major contributors to cyber criminal activity? And if so, what are they?
So I do share your concern. I think that there's been tremendous work done in partnership between the U.S. Secret Service and the FBI down in Alabama to train local law enforcement in cyber forensics and capabilities, a program that is free, a program that local law enforcement merely has to reach out to the local cyber fraud task force to be admitted to. But there are greater complications internationally. Back to my point that I raised before, the fact that U.S. law enforcement does not have the authority to disrupt dark web forums and bulletproof hosts that are complicit in leveraging attacks against the U.S. and critical infrastructures in the U.S., yet some of our allies do, whether it's the Estonians, the Dutch, the Ukrainians, or the Australians now. I think we need to pay closer attention to what limited forms can federal law enforcement take to disrupt those forums. In addition, I think the cyber fraud task forces, which have done a great job domestically and do exist in a few cities internationally, should be expanded to go beyond that. And there should be greater support from the State Department for that initiative.
Yeah. I first recommended to the Secret Service they open their first overseas electronic crime task force in Rome, which they did. And it would be great to have more of that activity spread around the globe because we set a good example in working with other law enforcement.
Yes, and just one more comment on that. It strikes me that the state attorneys general, who are pretty active, certainly on the breach front, but pretty active and politically motivated, they always say the attorneys general are the ones who are in waiting to run for governor, that they might play a larger role in advocating for an increase in the municipal and domestic capabilities to act in this area. Tom, I'd like to go back to the public-private cooperation issue. Do we really have adequate public-private cooperation And if so, does it work at all sizes of institutions? Or do the small and lower mid-sized companies struggle with this? What are your view of what works and what doesn't work in public?
In the 23 years that I've been in cybersecurity, I would say that in the last 2 years, we have taken dramatic leaps and bounds in the level of bidirectional information sharing that exists between major corporations and the U.S. government to prevent systemic failures and systemic attacks that could really become national security events rather quickly. I do think it's more difficult for small, medium-sized companies to get involved at that level. However, they can and they should join the local cyber fraud task forces, and they should pay close attention to the Twitter handles of whether it's Cyber Command, whether it's CISA or folks like Jen Easterly, whether it's the FBI or Secret Service, who are regularly putting out joint advisories on threats via Twitter and LinkedIn that can be easily consumed with best practices to harden those systems from those threat actors.
So, Tom, today, the Washington Post had an article, Ellen Nakashima, and another author, I don't remember who the other person was, about these critical infrastructure regulations that came out of DHS following Colonial Pipeline attack. And they haven't been published. Ellen got a copy of them through a FOIA request with a little bit redacted. But there's been criticism of transparency is important. Why aren't you publishing these? Why aren't you making them available to for everyone to see? Do you have any thoughts on that? Maybe there's something I'm not seeing.
No, it's a typical DC phenomenon. You've got two sides to a coin there, right? You don't want the enemy to necessarily know what the security posture will be of those very significant critical infrastructures. That being said, you have the power of K Street and the lobbyists from an industry that was pretty much unregulated, particularly to cyberspace, in their history. And so now, with the pending, you know, lawsuits also on the table, I think they've probably hired some of the very best former politicians to represent them and make sure that that's not available to the public yet. It's always been the challenge in DC. You know it best, Jody. You know, great standards and guidance gets watered down by, you know, these roundtables of influence.
Yeah. Well, let me look at the NERC, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation's regulations that the utility sector voluntarily agreed to. I mean, why do we think our utility grid is so vulnerable? Because the regulations are so weak. Mm-hmm. But we aren't going to have the details or the keys to the kingdom in a reg anyway. So it's that typical thing about DC can't quite understand it's a two-way street and both lanes have to be open. I don't know. It's very frustrating to see stuff like that.
But we should be happy, Jody, at least that there is some incoming regulation on the pipelines of the U.S. which were unregulated vis-a-vis cyber threats and attack previously.
Well, you know, I suppose. I've always been against regulating things that the private sector should be able to manage on their own, and risk is something they should be managed on their own. But I guess after a while, I just have to get tired of saying that because companies aren't doing what they're supposed to do. They aren't spending the money they're supposed to spend. And now we're having attacks that are impacting society and innocent people, and it's difficult to watch. So Congress may have to regulate. One last question. I've predicted for some time that the EU is going to usurp the US on cybersecurity the way that it has on privacy. They're well-funded over there. They're targeting the online platforms. They have very educated staff, well-organized, dividing up topics. They have a reg out on artificial intelligence. They're, you know, requiring certain things for cybersecurity. Do you think the US is going to continue to lead globally in this area, or do we need to step up our game?
When it comes to regulatory oversight and enforcement, I do think that you are correct, that the EU is the gold standard now as it relates to privacy and information security globally. There's only one exception out there, and it's specific to the financial sector, and that would be the Monetary Authority of Singapore, who has also done incredible work in this regard. Again, the laissez-faire economic approach of the U.S. government to cybercrime failed to take into account that, you know, with laissez-faire economics, that the market will solve the problem. And what the market did is it created a new market called the dark web, which is an economy of scale of $1.5 trillion a year.
Yeah. The bad guys market.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, it's been great having you as a guest. Thank you so much for your insights. I find myself leaning toward your side of the counterattacks on in the cyber area, even though maybe the legal framework isn't as strong as Jody would like it to be. But I really thank you. And Jody, anything more?
Only that if we start attacking, they might attack back and we have no idea how infected our systems are.
Agreed, which is why we're always going to be challenged at the international norm level to create an international law around cyber crime and security, because there are wide swaths of American cyberspace that have been colonized by our adversaries, which is why when you look at a heat map of attacks on the world stage, there's a ton of compromised infrastructure in the U.S. that is launching attacks against Americans and Europeans, yet it isn't U.S. hackers that are controlling that infrastructure.
Thank you for joining us this week on the U.S. National Privacy and Cybersecurity Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy the show and want more content on the issues we cover, you can visit adcg.org. The Association for Data and Cyber Governance is the leading association connecting all aspects of data management, cybersecurity, and governance. Our listeners can use code POD at checkout for 50% off membership. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.